And a beautiful Arizona morning to you all. The sun is up, the birds are chirping, and that soil's just waiting for a seed.
It's true.
Hang on just a second. Let me turn your microphone on. There you go.
I was on.
There you are. Your microphone was on.
I did
your
my part.
That was all me, guys. I'll take the fall on that one. That's the engineer.
Yeah, wow. 80 degrees this coming up week. This is the first weekend in February, which is always the first weekend that we recommend people start dipping their toes in the water as far as planting tomatoes. We feel like you got to get them in early enough to beat the heat at the other end, but not so early that, you know, you have the chance of freezing. Of course, anybody that did it last weekend found out what we were talking about, because most of this last week, some areas in the valley were in the upper 20s. So if you planted them, you had better had some really good protection.
My truck said 26 degrees Wednesday morning when I started it.
26. Yeah, wow. Well, even covered tomatoes would have been in trouble at that point. So from here on out, we're generally, and we get past really next week and the following week, about the middle of February, we're generally pretty much through the woods. So as far as normal frost dates in most part of the valley. So anyway, it's time to start thinking about those warm season vegetables, tomatoes and peppers and squash and cucumbers and melons and those types of things as we get into February and early March. But we're still in, you know, really in the throes of planting deciduous fruit trees. So peaches and apricots and plums and apples and pears, rose bushes, containerized rose bushes, you know, pretty late for bare root, but, you know, buy them in a container and plant them. And really almost any non-frost sensitive tree, shrub, or vine right now, get them in as soon as you can, because, you know, the longer they're in before it gets hot, the better your chances of having them be acclimated and taking that heat. Also, it just takes a lot less worry about how much to water, how often to water. You know, you water good this time of year when you first plant things, and they'll go 2, 3, 4 days, maybe a week even, before needing watered again. So really saves on the watering, saves on the guesswork as to how much to water and those sorts of things. So pretty darn good time to be in the garden doing just about any darn thing. And today, of course, is the first Saturday of the month, so you can also come and get a free hot dog today. And the Pond Gnome will be at our location from 10 to noon doing their annual. This is, I think, year 5 or 6 maybe that they've done it at our place anyway, on showing people how to clean out, get ready, get your pond ready for spring and summer. So if you've got a pond, or maybe you're thinking about a pond, they'd love to talk to you about that.
The Pond Gnome, that is Barbie's the wife.
Barbie and Paul.
Paul Holdeman.
Right?
They are pretty pioneers and natural ponds for the Phoenix area, for a lack of a better term. And they took it to a whole new level.
They really do. It's all sustainable, natural, you know, using, you know, biofilter technology and design and construction as to how to construct the pond so you don't have to use chemicals and things like that to keep your pond balanced and clean and pretty darn maintenance free. We've got a couple of ponds at our location at the Landscape Center, and, you know, we virtually do nothing to them. I mean, other than actually having to remove plants and clean them out because they grow too well. Once you get them set up, if they're set up right, they're just really not much trouble at all, and it's just wonderful to have the sound of water, all the other things that water provides, hummingbirds and dragonflies and butterflies, and, you know, every once in a while something really unusual like a heron or a you know, in some parts of town, probably raccoons and different things in your yard. It's kind of fun.
It's amazing just what a little bit of water will do. And on a pond, it done right, it can be less water than a lawn. It's a lot less than a swimming pool, unless you're really going all out. You hear water and you think, well, we're in the desert, that's just a waste. Done right, you don't need a lot of water to create a living pond, or at least have a water feature. We recommend that for people that are against busy streets or have loud neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
Get running water to drown
it out. That white noise. And they make, we have one on display as well that's pondless. There's no standing water. It all goes through rocks,
great,
underground, into a cistern, so that's safe. It is absolutely, totally maintenance free. You get all the benefits of the noise. So if you just want the sound and the vision of a waterfall or some tumbling water and that white noise, you're right. If you've got a little bit of traffic noise, or maybe if you live in my neighborhood, maybe you get a little airplane noise, you know, you got, you know, those things, it's fantastic. And you don't have to worry about any of the liability, especially if you wanted to put it in a public, like out in your front courtyard or in your front yard or something. They're perfect for that.
You don't have to worry about all the safety features that pool requires.
Right.
Two barricades and a fence and closing springs and blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Plus the fact you mentioned water. Most ponds, if you really want to have a nice clear pond, you need to have a certain amount of that surface area covered with lily pads or floating plants, that sort of thing. So you're covering a lot of the surface area of your pond, which eliminates a lot of evaporation as well. So
that's today, 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock, they start doing their thing, and then hot dogs at noon on our outdoor kitchen, and sit in our beautiful outdoor furniture and soak up some rays and, you know, buy a geranium or a petunia or a tomato while you're there.
That's at Harper's Nursery on Hayden Road, just south of Thomas. And I asked you last week, I got to ask you again, have you turned your water back on?
Once. Okay. I mowed the lawn, turned the water on to let it, you know, to water after I mowed, put a little fertilizer on, watered it, turned it off, had a little rain. What was it, Monday night or Tuesday night? So we'll see this upcoming week, though, folks. It's getting, you know, if it gets in the 80s and you've had your water off, you need to kind of watch it. You may need to kick it on a little bit. So I still haven't watered trees and shrubs, though.
Really?
Just the lawn.
Just the lawn.
Yep.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation if you have a question about your outdoor living area, gardens, trees, shrubs, if it has to be watered, trimmed, cut, pruned. That's our talking points for today. And you can also text in to 411-923 if you've got a question. You don't have time to caller, you know, a lot of people just forget how to make phone calls anymore.
What is that thing? Oh, it's a computer. No, it's a telephone. It works that way. You can talk to it.
So on our lawns, you had mentioned you had just you'd mowed and fertilized.
Right.
So this is our winter ryegrass.
Right.
And it needs fertilizing how often?
Well, ideally, you know, in the perfect world, you'd do it once a month. But, you know, if you could do it every 6 or 8 weeks, it'd be better than what a lot of folks do.
Which is not.
Which is not at all.
Once when they plant.
You know, what happens to even to ryegrasses, winter cool season grasses, we get a couple of hard frosts, and they don't like that much. You know, they kind of want to slow down. They get yellow. They quit growing. And they get real stubborn. It's hard to get them turned back around till it warms up. So with the oncoming a little bit warmer weather, this would be a great weekend to fertilize those winter lawns, because with a combination of a good fertilizer, and we recommend a product called Turf Royale, or it's a 21-7-14 analysis, and it has some ammonium nitrate in the blend of nitrogen. So that ammonium nitrate works really well when the soil's cool. You put that on, you get this little bit of warmer days, you'll get that lawn greened right back up in a hurry.
We've got our first question in on text this morning as it relates to the landscape and garden. We need to move an orange tree. What's the best advice to do so successfully?
Wow. Well, timing. You know, so this would probably be a pretty good time to do it before it gets warm. Make sure that you get an adequate size root ball, and without knowing how big the tree is, it'd be pretty tough to know how to tell you how big a root ball, but you've got to get some roots and soil intact, you know, when you get it out of the ground. If you break all that up and it all falls apart, it's probably not going to make it. And it might really depend on how big the tree is, whether it's worth moving or you can even possibly move it or not. But timing's probably the biggest thing, and then keeping the root ball intact. So this is a good time of year to do it.
There you go. Good luck with moving it. And there are people that professionally move trees. They got big trucks that can back up if it is valuable enough
yep.
to be to justify the cost of having a truck back up. The big old spade comes down, scoops it out. It keeps everything intact. Saves a lot of digging manual labor time, and then just drop it.
It does. And you can move a pretty big tree that way too. So if the if the tree is pretty big, as long as you got to be able to get a big
truck to
semi-sized truck to it, and to the place where you're going to put it in, then yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Let's get to Chris in Mesa, who wants to talk cactus this morning at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? We bought a cirrus cactus when it was a baby about 30 years ago and put it in an area that we thought was a nice size. But 30 years later, it's huge. And it's just overgrown the area. We're wondering, first of all, if you know of anybody who could professionally trim back a cactus?
Well,
because
they're not typically real hard to trim. Those cirrus, have kind of almost look, they're like joints. You can see where a good place to trim them is. And they're not, most of them are not terribly thorny, so they're not that hard to handle if you can cut them in pieces at those joints. So it might be something you could actually do yourself. But if you are looking for somebody to, I don't know that there's any cactus trimmers out there, but any good tree trimming service, Integrity Tree Service might be a place to start. They're a partner here at Rosie on the House, and have them maybe come out, or maybe you could text them a picture or send them a picture of what it looks like. They could tell you perhaps how to handle that. They might even just be able to walk you through it. I'm not sure, but they can be trimmed, and that's probably the best thing to do for it.